I can't put into words still how special it feels. It's such an honour to be asked to lead your country.
Silence means so much to me. It's more than just wearing the dress. It's about hopefully inspiring the next generation.
Welsh netball is in a really strong position at the moment. We're growing and we're looking forward to the upcoming season.
What do you remember most about that first cap?
The first cap, God, very little. That's a long time ago, very little.
Thanks so much for everybody's support, and especially those at the Netball Show, because I know you've supported us for a long, long time.
The Netball Show with Andy Lamb and Sasha Shipway.
I'm Sasha Shipway and this is The Netball Show with Mizuno. A few weeks ago we brought you the first part of our ACL podcast special. Well, let's rejoin Charty Curtis and Louise Rose from Team Bath as we move on to looking at possible causes for ACLs in netball players.
There's a few theories around, and actually some of the girls here, there's been some studies, but there's, I guess, a few different researches that go around. I mean, I think mine was, because I got a dead leg, my muscle switched off and then it all just packed in, but I don't know whether... I don't know enough about it as to why they happen, but I think netball female athletes, it's obviously quite a common injury.
Yeah, and there's more research going around, like your menstrual cycle and whether that affects it more. Yeah, I think the other thing, sorry, but I think as well, and this is absolutely no scientific research back at all, but I also think there's a lot of people, especially in Super League, who are either working full-time or full-time students, who are training and competing with full-time athletes. So you're trying to play on a court with someone who has the time to recover, the nutrition. Their whole life is based around sport, where actually for you it's only a small part, and it's just not physically possible to have the same kind of strength conditioning and all of that as someone who's a full-time athlete. And I think it's a very difficult point for netball, where it's amazing that we have all these full-time athletes, but for people who aren't at that stage yet, you're trying to compete with people who have like a lot more time just to make sure their bodies are okay and look after themselves. And I think that's just an area where potentially more injuries are arising at the moment. But I think, I mean, bar us, there's been multiple other ACL seasons, and I wonder if that's a factor of it.
I mean, I need to apologise to you, because as soon as it happened, I said, "Oh, do you want to do a blog about getting back?" And maybe that was a bit too soon, but we've seen netballers' knees have their own Twitters these days, and Nick's obviously done us a blog on the site as well. So
I think it's so important, and I've said this to both Shorty and Nick, that they're in a position where they are playing a really high level at the moment, and there was so much limited stuff out there. We found like a few Instagram accounts and YouTube videos and things, but I think as it is really common, and even like I've kept little photos and notes and things, I guess, from just a amateur perspective, because I haven't got a deadline where I'm going to be back playing or anything like that, but I think it's really important that people write about it or share their little journeys on it, and because sadly if it does happen, people have got that to look to. And it's great that you see so many players at a high level who have come back to it, and we watch them, especially in the Suncorp League. I remember we've been like texting each other saying, "Oh, look at that person, did you know they did this, blah, blah, blah." But it would be really good to see, I guess their journey to and their rehab program getting back there, and actually the ups and downs of it, which it's very easy to say at the end of it, all the ups, but I don't think enough people told us of some of the real lows that there were on the way.
Yeah, I think when you tell someone that you've done your ACL, obviously people understand that it's not a great injury to get, but everyone's so positive and trying to make you feel better, which is exactly what you need at the time. But then you also, I think I could have been more prepared for actually how difficult it was going to be. It's the first time I'd had general anaesthetic, which unrelated to the whole injury, like that itself is just something that it's absolutely fine, but I wish I'd known I was probably not going to feel great for a week after that. And it's just little things like that where everyone was like, you'll be fine, you'll be back to playing, which is so true, and it's exactly what you need to hear. But there's also parts of it where it would be nice just to sit down with someone and they'd be like, "Look, this is going to be really hard, you're probably going to struggle with this, but ultimately, yes, you will be fine."
Well, there's a blank page ready for a blog if you want one, either of you.
Okay.
And
no, I think it would be really good. Yeah, definitely.
Charlie, just finally then, how soon are you likely to be back? Fast five?
Maybe not quite that soon. I think, to be honest, we've seen, you know, Beth Cobden re-rupture. It's happened a lot. So for me, I just want to get back to a point where I'm pretty confident in my knee, very happy playing. And whenever that is, that will be. I'm not going to put a date on it. Hopefully sooner rather than later.
Because that's a danger again, isn't it, Louisa? Because you've got these athletes who are just really, really keen on getting back.
Mm.
And it's...
I think... It's really good, first of all. I've said this, I haven't got that drive yet to play again because mine hurt so much. Oh. I just haven't got that, like, mental drive to go running around the court again. But I think it's really great that, yeah, Shati and Nick both have that. And I think that's really good. And it's good they're working towards something. And, yeah, there is that sort of 9 months to a year turnover. So I'm sure I'll play again at some point. I just don't know when it'll be. It'll be when I'm feeling completely back to myself. But, yeah, it definitely is. I think that is the mental bit is yeah, going back on the court again and, I guess, returning to the scene of the crime.
Yeah, I think that's true. It has made me realise how much I love netball and I miss it a lot. But I also know if I sat on the netball court now, I would probably have a heart attack. So maybe not quite yet.
And it's maybe a slightly silly way to finish this bit, but any advice?
Yeah, I think for me, and I know everyone's different, but for me, I think before my surgery, I did every single piece of research that I could. There's a lot of papers out there. There's a lot of information. Talk to your surgeon. Talk to other people who've been through it. So I say that pre-surgery, if you're going to get it, because part of that research is whether you actually want surgery. That's a decision you've got to make. And then post, I think the best thing and the thing that helped me get through it the most probably was having Louise and Nick. So just people you can speak to about it. I think people who understand, because that is, yeah, it's very difficult talking to someone and trying to explain who doesn't understand, really. So having those people, I think, got me through the whole thing. And there's also a long way to go, but yeah, to date, that's been the best thing for me.
Yeah, I just follow on. I would say I've definitely got to a point now where there's been more positives I've got out of this than negatives. So, yeah, whether that's actually learning to enjoy rehab, and I think I'm at a point now where I am enjoying going training again, and yeah, you have got that different sort of goal of getting back. So it is a process. Like, try not to look too far ahead. You definitely have to just go week by week. And yeah, it's been great getting to know Shanti a lot better. We've become really good friends now, and Nick as well. I already knew Nick, but obviously, like, we all have each other to talk to too. And yeah, I can definitely say it always will be okay, and it's fine. But yeah, don't be afraid to, yeah, be frustrated, I think, and have a moan or things like that. It's okay to do that. But yeah, definitely at a point now where there have been more positives out of this than negatives.
Well, don't rush back, but in the same frame, get back soon, all right?
Absolutely.
Jess, we're obviously looking at ACLs at the minute as well. Charlie and Lou there. Your own experience of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating in some ways because it seems to be a bit of a recurring theme, and obviously with how visible everything in Suncourt is, we kind of have seen so many injuries over there, and I know that there's a lot going on in terms of research behind the scenes. I think we have to all take some responsibility for what the next steps can look and feel like. I know as an England Roses program, we're looking at a framework around ACLs and how we can obviously continue to do preventative work to reduce the risk of injury, but with a real clear focus on ACLs, just because of the high rate of those injuries, really. So I think every country is obviously trying to play its part in scrutinising what it is we need to do better, more of, less of, things like competition structure. There's so many things involved, really, as well as just the biological and biomechanics of it. So yeah, it's my experience of it is, sadly, it's kind of, I haven't ever experienced it myself. But I've been around a number of players, whether that's been as their teammate or as a coach, that have sadly ruptured their ACLs. And it's such a shame, because there's no kind of rhyme or reason to it as we kind of view it. Do you know what I mean? It isn't necessarily an athlete that you feel doesn't train well, an athlete that's physically not in shape. It's normally really difficult to try and rationalize in the moment, because, you know, people like Pam Cookie have done theirs multiple times. I know that you've obviously spoken to Sharty, and that was devastating for her this year, and in what was promised to be, you know, a really great year for her in Super League as a young player coming through the system. And then obviously Louise Rose, you've spoken to, who works at Bath as well, as the netball coordinator. And all of these athletes that I'm talking about are good trainers. You know, they adhere to their training.
Yeah.
They work at a really good intensity. So there isn't really a quick hit as to what the problem is. And that's why I know that, you know, a lot's been spoken about around the genetics of it and the high risk in terms of female athletes. And then you combine that with the nature of our sport and the mechanics and the demands that the body goes through for us. And we do have to take, you know, a big responsibility to keep looking into it, because it's just so sad and it can be quite devastating. And whilst I think we've got some great stories of people that have returned to the game, more often than not people do, but it's just, you know, especially when you're talking about the top end of the game, you don't want to be missing players for, you know, for a year. Ultimately it's normally that long before somebody's back to playing at the level that they left the game. So we have to try and prevent it, really, and we owe it to the players to do that, and make sure that our practices are safe, that they're evidence-based, and that we're really putting safeguarding and challenging ourselves as to what that needs to be moving forward.
Another person who's going through the ACL injury at this stage is Nick from Storm. Nick, what stage are you at on your recovery at the minute?
So I'm entering my more latter stages of rehab now, so it's become a little bit more interesting. I can do a little bit more plyometric work, and netball specific kind of movements. So I'm running a lot more. It's getting slightly easier. I think I'm over the worst bit and the toughest part, so now it's getting a bit more exciting.
And it'll be tricky, because you'll go from being very active on a daily basis to almost nothing.
Yeah, looking back, I'd say that is the hardest part of the injury. I mean, I got injured mid-season, so that's when you're going from being completely active, maybe training twice a day, to having your surgery done. And I had a meniscal tear as well, which meant I was in a stiff leg brace for 2 weeks and I was on crutches for 6. So yeah, that was definitely hard. It kept tearing my hair out at home, and I think the key part of that was just to keep busy and to distract yourself rather than just sitting at home and moping around. So yeah, that was a challenge for me, who can't really sit still.
What kind of things did you do?
Yeah, so I actually, when you're non-weight bearing completely on crutches, it's quite hard to get around, because it hurts your arms after a while, so you can't travel very far. So I got my boyfriend, we hired a wheelchair so that I could get out and about, and we actually went to the seaside. So yeah, that definitely helped, getting out and about and just distracting yourself from it.
There's a bit of talk about when it happens to maybe leaving it a while before you get the surgery done. What was the time frame for you?
So I did it, and I think I got my scan results 10 days later, and then I was quite lucky, so I got quite quickly into surgery. So within a couple of weeks, I'd had mine fixed. So yeah, I mean, I think you need to try and be in the best possible state you can be before your surgery, so trying to get all your range of movement back and things like that to help to kind of influence a better outcome. And I think I managed to do that, so I was quite lucky.
Was it a relatively long 10 days then? Did you spend it researching every possible option that you could do, that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, at the time I thought I'd done it, because you think the worst, don't you? And then a couple of days later, I'd started to walk again on it, and I thought, oh, okay, it can't be that bad then. So, yeah, no, and it's always good. You need to get a scan done, because you never know, like, the knee's a really complex joint. So if you ever have any sort of niggle or knock to the knee, I'd recommend getting a scan done anyway. And it came back that ruptured ACL and torn meniscus.
On that return then, I mean, I think we saw that picture of you in the hospital, didn't we, with your thumbs up?
Yeah.
Was that just more a case of, hi everybody, I'm all right?
Yeah, I've got through the surgery. Yeah, no, so I think that's quite a nice feeling, knowing that it's, because it's not that nice waiting knowing you've got to have surgery, because you're just in limbo a little bit and you can't really truly crack on with your rehab. So I think a little milestone's achieved when you've had your surgery date, you got through it, and now you can actually get on the road to recovery and start your rehab.
So how much would you say is mental, how much is physical? About the same?
Oh, I'd say, no, like 90% mental, 10% right. Physical. Yeah, no, it is tough. It's, you know, it's a 9 to 12 month recovery for a reason. So things do happen really slowly. Like, you're not going to get results overnight. So you need to be patient. And it's very much it's not a straight diagonal up. It's very much 2 steps forward, 1 step back kind of process. But you've got to stick with it. It's not like you can have a month off, because you're just going to go back. It's just a constant 9 to 12 month process. So it's about being resilient and just believing that it's gonna get better, and it does.
The thing is, you've all been going through the rehab at the same time, so how important is it to have that support? And
it's lovely, it is nice. Like, I found out they'd done theirs around the same time as me, and we created a WhatsApp group. We've called it ACL Club. So we share stuff on there and help each other through, yeah. But even though we're going through our injury at the same time, like, no knee's the same and no recovery's the same. So we're at very different stages and achieve things at different times. But it is nice knowing that other people are going through it at the same time.
And no doubt every one of you would have had those different down days, but it's been part of that to G everybody up and be there as a support.
Yeah, and also I think you've got to be conscientious of the fact that, okay, I might be having a good day, but they might not be having a good day. So it's like, they might not feel great. So it's a bit about that as well. I mean, we don't speak on there every single day about every little bit of detail, but we check in when we really need someone to talk to, and they truly understand. Because I feel like, to understand what an ACL rehab is like, you have to go through it, because it's something else. I mean, I've been injured before, and I'd say this is one of the most challenging injuries that I've had, and I think it's especially hard for Shati and Lou, because they haven't had an injury before, and it's quite a savage first injury to go through.
Mm. And Shati had that kind of season where it was almost just like ready for it to make a big breakthrough, and then for something like this to happen.
Yeah, there's never a good time to get injured, but it happens, and it's part of your career. And you can look at successful athletes who have had loads and loads of injuries, but it doesn't stop them from achieving what they want to achieve. It's just part of the athlete life.
I mean, being an athlete as well, you'll almost want to get back as soon as possible because you love the game, but that's a danger in itself because we could even look at Beth Cobden.
You obviously want to get back as quickly doing what you love as soon as you can, but I suppose that can be a danger in itself. But you just got to be, I suppose, sensible and listen to your body and go back when you feel physically and mentally ready, not put a time frame on it, and hit your physical tests that you need to get. And I think the most important part is hitting the court when you're feeling confident.
It happened while you were at Storm, didn't it? We'll get some advice from Tom shortly, but what kind of things have you been doing to maintain your fitness in the meantime?
So I've a lot of off-feet stuff initially. So I'm on the bike. I did some battle ropes. So when I did it in the season and the girls were down on court, I was up with Tom upstairs and he'd get me on the battle ropes, so, and on the boxing. So getting my anger out there. But now most of the training is S&C, so in the gym. So you're getting your strength back in your quads and hamstrings. That's the key part of it, because you get a lot of muscle wastage. But it does take time to build back up. So a lot of strength work in the gym.
And you're feeling all right at the minute, though?
Yeah, feeling strong. I'm getting there. I'm just see the light at the end of the tunnel now, because at times you can't, and the more and more movement stuff that I can do and jumping and landing, it lifts your spirits and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
And you're jumping off pirate ships into the sea on holiday, which we saw on Instagram.
Yeah, I was a bit apprehensive actually about jumping into the water. It's a bit of a pathetic jump, but no, yeah, so getting there.
But again, it's little things like that. There's plenty of people online that have gone through it, and people in the league and maybe just in local prem clubs as well. So what advice would you have for them?
I'd say not to expect results too quickly. You know, it's like a 9 to 12 month recovery for a reason, so celebrate the small things, because that's what gets you through. You know, you might be managing a little bit of knee pain or something, and then you can do a squat pain free for the first time, and you know, that's huge. So just celebrating the small milestones, and at times, you know, you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, but you've got to keep going. Like, the body's amazing and it does heal and you will get there. So just having the belief that it's going to happen and you will get back on the court.
Brilliant, Nick. Thanks for your time, and we'll see you on court soon.
Thanks, Andy.
We know that 1.4 million women and girls across the country are playing netball, but the clear majority are still playing in running shoes or generic trainers, which don't provide the necessary support required to play the fast-moving and dynamic sport that netball is today.
So as a sports injury specialist, one of my biggest bugbears is seeing netball players playing netball in running shoes. The reason this is annoying for me is because running shoes are designed for running in a linear motion. They're not designed for stop, start, change direction, and looking after the stability of a player as they're coming down from the air. So the benefit of a netball shoe over a running shoe is they're designed to give you more stability and allow you to change direction with better grip, and also allow you to give it a more stable knee and ankle position when coming down from a height, therefore reducing the risk of injury in those two areas.
With ACL injuries being a common problem in netball, the support of clubs' strength and conditioning programmes plays an important role in recovery. Tom McCann is the Surrey Storm S&C coach, and he's working alongside Nick on her return to netball.
With Nick, we tried to encourage her to do some other things that she could do, so she did some kind of off-feet conditioning stuff, upper body circuits and things like that, just to kind of mentally keep her happy and keep her occupied and make her feel like she was doing something and working quite hard as well. So we just tried to shift folks away from the traditional running, cycling stuff to upper body.
And what other things could you focus on? An individual plan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an individual plan. Basically, injury is quite a good opportunity to focus on other aspects. So Nick's predominantly wanted to focus on her upper body strength over this time, because we couldn't put as much focus onto the lower limbs in the early stages. So having that goal in place whereby she wanted to achieve X amount of pull-ups and then weighted pull-ups, improve her bench press and things like that, gave her some focus and gave her something to do and something to come into train. And it's just good to kind of mentally keep herself ticking over, as well as then integrating the rehab into that.
What kind of advantage is it for people actually to have maybe a week or so away from being around the club?
Oh yeah, it's massively important just to give her a bit of a break mentally and make sure that she's got other things going on outside of netball and outside of the club, such that if she did want to go away, it's not a complete and utter change of her identity. She's got other things going on outside of that. So from a psychological point of view, I'd say it's massively important to have breaks from the sport, still remain active and still keep on top of what you need to keep on top of, but go and explore things away from your sport.
And there's 1,001 other medical podcasts, thankfully. Yeah. Do you reckon there's one common cause in particular that around the ACL?
There's a few different mechanisms. One is hyperextension of the knees straightening too much, not so much in netball. The other one is where the knee kind of comes in relative to the foot when it's planted on the floor, called knee valgus. And that can happen during landing, which is quite common in netball, and also in change direction, which is less common so in netball, but still happens and is more common in other sports such as football, rugby and kind of running-based sports.
You'd have done a lot of work as well on the prevention on this.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about some of the work you've done on that.
So there's quite a lot of literature around this as well. So things around that are just kind of mainly neuromuscular training. So ensuring that there's sufficient strength in the legs, particularly kind of glutes, hamstrings and quads, as well as the calves, just to make sure that the legs are strong enough to decelerate effectively when landing and changing direction, and making sure that they're strong enough to keep the proper alignment of the kind of hip, knee and ankle. and then just kind of integrating in there some kind of plyometric aspects as well as any kind of balance work that might be necessary.
Mm. You'd have seen all sides of that rehab process as well. The days where things work and are going really well, or the frustration in a player who just obviously wants to get back. The important thing, though, is just being part of that whole support team around them.
Yeah, massively. It's really important to kind of encourage them and mention early doors that there will be ups and there will be downs, and it's never just a straight line back to where you were. There will be times where you couldn't do what you did the day before, and we expect that. We expect that to happen. So when it does happen, don't worry, it's part of our plan. And just kind of encouraging them to make sure that they know there will be a few hiccups and there might be a few backsteps along the way, but that's all part of the process to get them back.
You're listening to The Netball Show with Mizuno. I'm Sasha Shipway. Lorna Botwright has been telling The Netball Show about her experiences as a sports and movement specialist. Her Twitter says she's determined to reduce ACL in ballers and summed up the situation in two tweets of less than 140 characters. She's been sharing her thoughts on why this is so important to her.
Because I played netball for so long, I've seen a lot of injuries come and go, and the consistent thing that I see is that the girls that have braces and tapings on their ankles always end up with the most severe injuries at knees, because when you restrict what is called inversion and eversion range at the calcaneus, the heel bone, those two movements you have to make supination and pronation, which are the big foot movements. If you can't make supination and pronation because you can't invert and evert your calcaneus, the requirement for movement will just move up the chain. And then what happens is the knee then is under too much strain. And women are already under strain with the ACL because we have a different Q angle at the leg and we have more lax ligaments. So we're already under pressure. And then to put ourselves under more pressure deliberately by taping and bracing, you're just waiting for your ACL to tear.
And how you managed to get that into two lots of 140 characters is...
I know. I was trying to make it succinct. It takes ages to write. The thing is, like, I've been talking about it for a while because I'm really passionate about it. I'm really passionate about the netball. A lot of the girls that come to my clinic in the city are netballers because I'm well known in the area for being a netballer and a therapist. And they know that I understand the requirements of the game when you go back. So, I've talked about it a lot, and it sounds really crazy, but I have sleepless nights about how much it stresses me out when I hear that more girls have had ACL ruptures. I'm like, take your ankle braces off. But it's not even just in our sport. Like, if you look at someone like Andy Murray, I don't care what anyone says, he's had ankle braces on his ankles since quite early in his career because he ruptured a ligament quite early but didn't want to miss a game. Yeah. They strapped him up, and he's never taken them off since. Now, he's had ongoing hip problems. He's had surgeries where it would make him better and then it didn't, and he's out again and he's in again. And the bottom line is, because his ankles can't move, other joints have to do too much. Whether it's knee or hip, it's too much pressure up the chain. And when I see that he, like, is constantly, like, on and off, I'm like, why hasn't one of his therapists ever taken his bloody ankle braces off and trained his ankles properly?
Yeah.
And then the debate is, yeah, but, you know, then we get ankle sprains. But I'm a netballer. I've been a netballer for so long. I've played at a high level. I've never sprained my ankles, and I have landed on other people's feet. But instead of just strapping you up, let's teach people how to strengthen, how to mobilise, how to make their feet move properly. One of the problems we have is 21st century lifestyles don't encourage natural movement of feet, don't encourage natural muscular strength, because we all sit around for too much.
So you reckon we've seen too much tipping in the league then?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, like, I have this discussion with my coaches. Some of my coaches have been involved with England netball and whatnot, and they all say to me, yeah, but Australian netball do it. New Zealand netball do it, England netball do it, so you can't go against the grain. And I'm like, just because we do something, it doesn't make it right. Because we all think something is the best until somebody challenges the status quo and provides something better. And for me, I'm not afraid to say I don't agree with the best of the best in the business, because I don't. Because if you think about the mechanics of how the foot works, it can't possibly provide you with everything you need on the netball court if it cannot move properly. And it's a mobile joint. There are 33 joints in the foot and ankle, 26 individual bones with 19 muscle attachments and 107 ligaments. It wouldn't be built that way if it was supposed to stay still. We wouldn't have all of that happening if that joint was supposed to be immobile. The knee joint only has two bones and then a floating patella that completes it. And that's because it's only supposed to make smaller movement. It's supposed to be a stable joint. So it's supposed to have a really mobile foot, a stable knee joint to control motion on top, and then a mobile hip. And like, one of the biggest problems is that we have very immobile hips nowadays because we all sit too much in 90 degrees and we don't mobilize in different directions our hips. And then we have these immobile feet because we don't walk enough, because we all drive cars and we sit on sofas and we sit in chairs all day at our desks, and we don't move enough because we're too tired from all of the hard work we do. So we sit around some more. You know, so we have these feet that don't get natural movement. We have these hips that don't get natural movement. And then we strap things down to play sport and expect the thing that's supposed to be stable and not mobilised to take the brunt of it. You're just never going to survive.
Have you had much experience working with people to actually get through ACLs?
Yeah. I've seen a lot of ACLs. And actually, one of the things I have done is been involved with observing surgery with a guy who invented something called the internal brace, which is helps to repair your ACL rather than reconstruct it. So up till the last few years, everybody's reconstructing that ACL with either a hamstring graft or a patellar tendon and bone graft, whereas this guy in Scotland, who is amazing, he created this bracing system where you put an internal, like a little brace in, and then he gets your damaged ACL, he wraps it around it, and then he encourages it to regrow itself. So it's a sick surgery. He's amazing. Mm. And it means you can mobilise a lot quicker and you recover from your injury a lot quicker. But it's still a relatively baby surgery in the grand scheme of things. So it's not mainstream yet. And lots of doctors are against it because they're like, well, it's not proven. But for me, I'm not a... You can't get things to be proven unless people take the chance to do it. And if you talk to people and you understand and you listen and you learn and you continue to learn and you understand your subject matter, you will always be able to make better informed decisions for yourself. And rather than just going, you know, people like, well, you should stay with the recon because it's proven. Well, it is proven to be the best thing we've got, but it's actually not that great. Because if you return to high-level sport, the statistics at the moment are about 25% re-injury of the same knee and 40% re-injury of the opposing knee. So it's hardly like the greatest thing, is it, if actually one in four re-injure and one in nearly two injure the other side. So actually, why would you stick with something that's got you those kind of stats when there are other things on offer? Yes, they're smaller, but they are proven to be better in the small cases that have been done, if that makes sense. You know, my biggest thing is that me and the girls that work with me, we are learning all the time, we're understanding the human body all the time, we're testing the boundaries. And anecdotally, whilst everybody wants to go with what the research says, if there is no research, you have to look at what you're working with and what's anecdotal. And in my clinic, anyone who comes to see me, I don't work with if you just want to stay in taping or bracing. That's out. We don't see clients who want to just do that. That's not what we're about. We're about making the human body work for you better.
In the unfortunate incident that something like this happens, how important is it to maybe take a bit of time to properly read on your options?
Oh, absolutely. For me, I find it insane. Like, sometimes I'll see people, and we always take a really detailed injury history of what's happened to them before. And they'll be like, oh yeah, I've had a few surgeries. I'll be like, right, what surgery did you have? Oh, I don't know. You don't know what someone did to you? Well, not really. It was some kind of something. I'm like, so you let someone cut into your human body that you've never met before and do something to you and you don't know what it is? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, that's crazy. If you get injured, you need to look at all your options, read your options, learn about the people that are offering you these surgeries, understand where they came from, what their experience is. And the ones who are good and the ones who the things that they want to do are of high level will be willing to give you all the information. The ones who are like, well, you should just trust me, they're the ones that I don't trust. If they can't explain to you what they're doing, how they want to do it and why, then I don't feel like they really know. But the best people will tell you. And so if you look at your options, and you need to find out what's best for you, because how you've been previously injured or how your lifestyle is and every day, what you do for jobs, etc., that will all inform what you decide to do going forward for certain issues. And so I always get my clients to get all the information, think about what they want for their life, which I know is a really hard question, especially for young people in sport. But sometimes it's like, okay, so you're saying you might not have an ACL reconstruction, which is fine, but you might be able to go back to sport. Or if you have an ACL reconstruction, remember that we'll need to rehab really hard because you're taking other tissue from your body, and so then you'll be missing pieces of tissue. So if you don't rehab hard, you might not get your joint range back or your strength back. And right now it might not matter so much, but like, especially for women, if you want to have a baby in the future as a woman, you look after your baby a lot of the time kneeling on the floor. Mm. You know, changing the baby on the mat, playing the baby on the mat, kneeling down. And some of the problems you can get is it with recons, if you don't rehab well or if there's complications, kneeling becomes a problem. And then what happens is, because you can't kneel but you want to kneel, you end up kneeling on the other knee, one leg up, rotating your body in different ways. And later on down the line, you'll have something like a lower back issue, shoulder issue. This actually stems from not being able to kneel on your knee when you want to. That's literally how it bumps down the line. So there's so much more to any injury that you get than just that injury. It's what happens to your other joint system if you don't recover well, if the surgery doesn't go well, or if you get injured in the first place. You know, I always say, you know, if you can not sustain an injury, don't sustain an injury. Work hard to stay injury free, because it will affect so much more of your life than just the one impacted moment. Which is why I'm always like, think about what you're doing. Like, one of the girls at netball tonight who is new wears double ankle braces. Like, you need to get them off, mate. And she's like, yeah, but do I really need, does it really matter about my ACL if it does go? I'll come at the end of my career. And I'm like, yeah, because the rest of your life depends. You've got to have a knee that you want to walk on for the rest of your life. Of course it matters. But I don't think we have enough understanding or respect for our own human bodies sometimes in this day and age, where everything's so fast paced and we can just have what we want when we want it. The human body is the only thing that you can't click your fingers and fix, or pay to have fixed really quickly, or, you know, answer the question really quickly about the human body. Everything else we can Google, we can pay for, we can, you know, ask Alexa. But you can't do that with your human body. And I think that because of the lifestyles we have, people find that really hard to deal with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is as well, a lot of this is down to having that mental drive to get through it. Charlie said that she went from being very active to nothing, and that's got to be really difficult.
Yeah, the rehab space and time is very hard. But actually, it's the support system you have around you, in my opinion, because I get my clients mobilising as quickly as possible, and we work with getting them active as quickly as possible. As soon as I can get them mobile enough at the knee that they can bend and flex it enough to be on a static bike, they're on a static bike. That's fact, because if they're a sports person, they need that sporting like feeling, and even if it comes down to like sweating and feeling that heart rate go high and stuff, they need that. And mentally, that, you know, that's really important. So we get them moving and mobilising as much as possible as soon as we can. And that's a really important part of the recovery as well. But all these things, if we can prevent it happening in the first place, that's got to be where we've got to go. You know, they're talking last weekend, three major knee injuries in the Australian Super League, and they're like, the debate is, should we put an extra step into a netball game? The extra step's not going to make any difference. Two of the girls didn't damage their knees from trying to make a step they couldn't make. They were 2 foot landing, and as they tried to 2 foot land with the heel going down first, they've got taped and ankle braced ankles, and you can see that their ankle is totally rigid. In a moment where you don't have a rigid ankle, your ankle would flow into movement, and that movement would then be taking some of the impact into the foot and ankle, and then the rest comes up the chain. But because the foot couldn't move, you can see the knee just take the brunt of the impact as they landed. There are other things that put you at ACL risk, of course. There are many contributors, but the bracing and taping is definitely a mega one for netballers. You do not see it in basketball, not like you see it in netball. And they play the same rotating up and down court, very similar game to us in the movement patterns, but they don't brace and tape their ankles. And that once they reduce their kicks to lower ankles, they have had a reduction in ACL injuries quite substantially. It's just such a connection.
We see it in the Suncorp, and they've got the knee program over there as well, so it just goes to show that even though they've got that,
the knees are just being overloaded.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it. Everyone's like, yeah, we got strapping these challenges. It's great to strengthen them, but if they've got to take the brunt of an immobile foot, you're just never going to win. You're just not. You have to get your foot and ankle moving. It's a mobile joint. It's supposed to move. It's supposed to take the pressure. Like, you can, if you get an actual foot and ankle model and see how much movement it can make and flow it can make, we're just taking all that away from it. Never going to survive.
Yeah, early prevention in this, that's got to be something.
Early prevention
you
is everything. Yeah, absolutely. And also teaching people how the foot should move. I'm big into education, so anyone who comes to us at the clinic, we don't just say, right, you need to do this and send them away. We explain why. We show them, we draw, we work it so that they get why they need that movement, why they should work with their feet and ankles, what they should be doing to help themselves. But I don't treat anyone who doesn't understand what our approach is and why. It's imperative, because if they understand it, they'll put more into it. And it really is the looking after yourself that is the key.
We saw Clan. They had the wobble boards out, the resistant bands for the underage.
Yeah, I saw them tag me in that. That was nice. It's good. It's really good. But actually, even getting into the more basics of how a foot and ankle needs to move, because some people have more pronated feet, some people have higher arch feet, some people's feet don't pronate as well, some people don't supinate as well. So we actually teach them basic foot mechanics before we even go to what the Clan team were doing, to make sure their foot can actually mobilise well in both directions.
So whereabouts are you based then, Lorna? Where's the clinic?
It's in Norwich, in the city centre. And we are a place called St Benedict. And we have a few girls who work for us. It's a small clinic, but we work with movement first and foremost, and then rehab as well.
And what's the best way to get in touch with you?
we have Instagram, people get in touch with us through that, and a Facebook page, and then we have like direct contact to the clinic on the It's Replay Sports Clinic, so people get in contact with us in any of those ways.
As ever, you can follow us on Twitter. We are at The Netball Show. Make sure you tweet us and give us your feedback. If you like the podcast, leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to the show. We're also on Facebook, also The Netball Show. So, yep, check us out, and thank you so much for listening.
I can't put into words still how special it feels. It's such an honour to be asked to lead your country.
Silence means so much to me. It's more than just wearing the dress. It's about hopefully inspiring the next generation.
Welsh netball is in a really strong position at the moment. We're growing and we're looking forward to the upcoming season.
What do you remember most about that first cap?
The first cap, God, very little. That's a long time ago, very little.
Thanks so much for everybody's support, and especially those at The Netball Show, because I know you've supported us for a long, long time.
The Netball Show with Andy Lamb and Sasha Shipway.